Welcome to Sales and Stanzas. I'm your host, Anthony Conrad, aka Decade Later. Today, we're going to be talking with one of my really, truly, truly dear friends, Travis Thomas. He is the founder and host of the Open Mic Live Performances Poetry Collective, Paradox in Poetry. I'd say recently, it's been about a year that Travis and I have known each other. And he's really who's most responsible for me getting back into poetry, along with Maria Rosa, but really who kicked it off, who gave me a microphone, who gave me a voice, and has been one of my dearest friends from the Bogota area. And we're going to be talking hip-hop, we're going to be talking poetry, travel, and the future of Paradox in Poetry. So stay tuned and hope you enjoy. Hey guys, this is Anthony, aka Decade Later, here with Travis Thomas, a poet, hey. Writer, traveler, vagabond, a host and founder of Paradox in Poetry. Travis, how are you doing, man?
Man, I'm good, man. I'm good. It's a little bit of a, you know, dark gray Saturday, but, you know, it's Bogota. We're making it.
Awesome, man. So let's go ahead and jump right into this. Tell us, if someone wanted to know, who is Travis Thomas? Who is the founder of Paradox Poetry? How would you describe it?
Wow. Well, I guess in describing myself, one of the things I've always said is that, as far as, like, I'm not my job, I'm not what I do. You know what I mean? I am who I am. And then and what I do is an expression of that. It's a partial expression, right? I can never fit all of who I am into what I do. But what I say, as far as describing myself, is like, I'm an ambassador in cross-cultural relations. For me, I would epitomize kind of who I am. And I'd say that like very lightly because I just don't like defining myself to one thing. I'm a bridge. I like being a bridge between cultures and people. I like understanding different perspectives, empathizing with different sides. And then I find, I guess in that, you know, I find my identity in many ways as being a bridge, you know, kind of. And that stems from, you know, just, I think, my life experiences, being in different spaces so much, you know, like, whether it be low class, high class friends, growing up poor, but then living in the suburbs later on, like working with organizations in different countries and cultures, you know what I'm saying? So, exactly. I almost find my identity in adapting, you know what I mean? Like being a chameleon kind of, which is very strange. So yeah, I explore a lot of those topics in my writing. And so yeah, to answer that question, describing Travis, I would look at myself as a thinker, a writer, a poet, someone who just loves questions, you know, sometimes more than answers, and the exploration and the process of getting to where you need to go. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And you spoke about your writing. Are you more of a writer in general? I've known you mostly as a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
How did you get started into writing?
Honestly, I think maybe my earliest memory, you know, because when you think about just, well, writing it, words, right? My first exposure to kind of words, where I found I had a fascination to them was when I was little, when I first learned to read. And ever since my dad used to have this book, The Giving Tree, and he used to read it to me. And I don't know. You know this book? You know that book?
I love it.
Yeah, it's an incredible book, right? Yeah, Shel Silverstein. Man, and I just remember, it's crazy too, because look, my dad was in this, at the time, my dad was in, if I remember correctly, was in this little like bunk room in a rehab. And he would just read it to me. You know, he would bring me over there, and we used to have this thing. You used to walk into the rehab, and you have to state like on the platform, off the platform, like this platform area. It's weird. I don't know. But nonetheless, yeah, I just fell in love with words early on. When I learned how to read, and my dad and my grandmother was really influential in that, I just was like, I'd be walking with my dad, and I'd just be reading everything, like reading every sign. And he was like, oh, man, I used to be overwhelmed because you just spell everything, read everything out, and you were just fascinated. And so from an early age, I fell in love with words, man, the construction of words. And fifth grade, I remember writing an essay for DEAR. Remember that? Awareness, Resistance, Education. And so I wrote this essay, and I ended up winning for the state of New Jersey, you know? Nice. And which is kind of ironic because I lived in, like, such a drug-infested area, you know? But you see the effect, so I guess it was really close to me. And I was able to really, I guess, express the effects of drugs on me, you know what I mean? Yeah. Especially, you know, my dad having struggled with addiction when I was younger. So, yeah, man. That kind of, I fell in love with words early on and just crafting them. And I think about, I was really encouraged by a social studies teacher in seventh grade when I lived in Minnesota. I moved there for 1 year, and he loved my poetry and just kept encouraging me to write. And you know, he was fascinated by my gift and just really encouraged me. And, I think that's when I really realized, like, I did have kind of a gift with seventh grade, and I just stuck with it, man. I just stuck with writing short stories. You know me more as a poet, but yeah, short stories, and then college, of course, academic writings. I just love writing. Whatever it is, whatever words involved, whether it be public speaking, and whether it be like translating, writing, learning languages, the methodology of linguistics, etc. Like, I'm just fascinated with words, bro.
Love it. And through your writing, as I was mentioning, you and I, we've mm-hmm. worked together on one of your amazing projects, Paradox and Poetry. Tell me about that.
Yeah, man, whatever you want to know. It's interesting because I actually had an interview yesterday with the college here, and they were talking about Paradox and Poetry, and they have this perception that it's like, you know, this big, big organization that's got this backing in the U.S. and, you know, et cetera. And I was like, it's not the not that big and elaborate. But that's cool, though, that there is that perception. But Paradox and Poetry, to be honest with you, I was kind of creating a proposal, like a general proposal for us the other day. And I went into kind of the history of Paradox and Poetry. And it started, honestly, like where I first had the idea, the spark of it, was in South Carolina, Aiken, South Carolina, okay? And I have to tell you this story. It's cool. Okay. So, sad, but also, I think, the beauty of intercultural exchange. And using poetry as activism. And I believe in this wholeheartedly. So, I was living in South Carolina. I was attending the University of South Carolina, Aiken. And I was working at a local church as the outreach director. Okay. So my job, essentially, like I told you, like ambassador in cross-cultural relations, I've always kind of worked with organizations in this idea of trying to get organization connected to the community. Okay. And so helping organizations, nonprofits, et cetera, kind of, creating a bridge between them and the community. And so understanding the culture within, understanding the culture without and around certain areas, and doing that locally and then internationally. So I hope that kind of paints a picture for you. All right. So what happened in this community in Aiken was that two police officers were slain. And so, you know, in the line of duty, so there was just kind of like a lot of tension within the community. And so you have police, right, who are patrolling more aggressively now because two of their own have lost their lives, you know. And you have a community that's being terrorized that are, you know, are on edge as well. You know what I mean? And then they're kind of being harassed. And I wouldn't say rightly so, but I understand from the police's perspective. I mean, having two officers and comrades, you know, be killed. So basically, there's just a lot of tension. And the chief of police came to me and she said, like, she knew I'd been active, always in the community, doing events, etc. And, you know, we had started a jazz cafe, had started a concert hall for the community. So anyway, she asked if I could help kind of in this tension, kind of help alleviate some of this tension between the police and the community. So we teamed up with a mental health counselor, and it was the chief of police and then me. And basically we decided to do a tour, you know, a poetry tour that was called Poetry in the Park Tour. You can probably still find some articles written on it. So we did this Poetry in the Park Tour, and the idea was, you're kind of, as we were thinking through it, I wanted to go to underserved parks, meaning I wanted to have these open mics at the parks in the neighborhoods, the bad neighborhoods, you know what I'm saying, that were underfunded. And what I want, and then what we did, the second part of it was to have the police come and to actually serve people food, the police from that community. Okay, so the police who are assigned to that community, that park, came and served food, and then we had the open mic. And so the idea was this, that as people are sharing this, because I understand the power of words of poetry and storytelling, police hearing these people's stories, the police themselves being able to share at the open mic, you know, normalizing these relationships. So it's not just that cop, but that's like, that's, you know, Officer Brian. You get what I'm saying? I wanted the community to have that feeling. And I wanted also the officers to have that, oh, that's, you know, Jerome or Jonathan, or you get what I'm saying? Put names and faces to things. Humanize. So that's really like the whole entire essence of Paradox and Poetry is to cultivate and catalyze global culture. And the idea is just to be more human. It's to humanize us. Like, when you hear someone's story, you can't ignore that. You get what I'm saying? So anyways, so this, that's kind of where Paradox and Poetry started. In 2003, with doing this Poetry in the Park tour. And then I realized, like, I love doing this. I love using poetry as activism. I love using poetry to create intercultural spaces. And I think one of the biggest success of that tour was like having a white man from South Carolina come to me and say, this is one of the most integrated events I've ever been to in all of my life living here. And he wrote a poem about it called Poetry in the Park. His name was Roger Brock. And it said, like, you know, black poets, white poets, male poets, female poets, da 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 da. Like, we all were heard. We all had one voice. And let's focus on that. Like, that was kind of one of the excerpts in his poem. And to me, that was like utter fulfillment, bro. Like, just, you know, I was in heaven just for him to kind of share that with me, because that's what I live for, is kind of changing those, like, changing perspectives and also like humanizing people, man. Like, just empathy. So 2013, I think that was, pardon me. And then 2016 is when I officially kind of like got the logo designed for Paradox and Poetry, and really established it as something that I would like to kind of do, and, you know,
nice. And create. I love that, and I really, it's something that through even my previous conversation with Maria Rosa, mm-hmm. Part of the family of Paradox and Poetry. There's so many things that you can do with poetry. It's mm-hmm. not just speaking, it's listening, it's changing, it's affecting. And yeah. It's something that, kind of like you, I started writing young and I lost it, and I felt lost without it. And I just didn't know what was going on or how to do it. Mm-hmm. And even in my own marriage, like, I've written things, and when I read it to my wife, I was trying to tell her in normal speech for years things. And then when I read it to her in poetry, like, she was on the verge of tears because she finally got it.
I love it.
And I just was like, whoa, this is this is deep. It's
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, you know what? I think about that. So go ahead. No, go ahead. No, I want you to continue. That was good. I just love what you were saying.
But yeah, I mean, and coming back to it, it's almost like reuniting with a lost love. Like you get that pride where you don't need it. You don't need her. You don't need him. I'm beyond that. But you always have that hope.
Mm-hmm.
It you have to come back on your own in a way. You gotta, you can't force it. But
yeah.
Just the way I've done it, I have a journal or a pad and a pen with me at all times, just in case I get that.
Yes.
Movement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I do the same thing, and I have a little series called Pocket Poetry, and those are for those poems. Because once you write, like once you're so used to writing, like there is times you have writer's block, but for the most part, like I just write every day. You know what I mean? And I have a little flashcards always carry with me. And so I'll either write it or I write it on my phone. And those are kind of the short poems I finish in a day. You know, I call those kind of pocket poetry. And that's kind of be another series actually that I do. But I wanted to touch on something that you said when you were talking about like when you wrote it for your wife and then she kind of understood it. She got it because I was explaining this yesterday, like, in essence, right, like poetry is an A to B, right? It's how do you get from point A to point B? And every poet has a different approach. You get what I'm saying? And the beauty of poetry is using language in so many different ways, like, and also by our own experiences, what we've been through, what we know, our own vocabulary, education, etc. It's going to formulate, it's going to help us formulate those words. It's going to influence that, right? That A to B. But what's beautiful about poetry, I think, is how much it captures the essence. And I really feel like when you were describing that, like sharing that with your wife and she like got it, was because like poetry forces us to wrestle with words, you know? It forces us to wrestle with words and sentiment. So it's kind of like, look, this is what I feel. This is what I want to, like, I want to translate this feeling. Like, if you think of yourself as a sponge, like, how do I squeeze the essence of all that I feel right now into this poem so there's nothing left in this sponge? You get what I'm saying? Like, on the paper, that ink, let that, like, kind of ink bleed and tell a story. And I think, even that's poetic, but I think that, like, I love that process. I think that's what I'm so fascinated about is like, no matter how many times you tell a story, this is what I have written about Paradox and Poetry, sort of kind of our summary. And is that the beauty of poetry is that there's always more to say than can ever be said, but still saying something. You get what I'm saying? Like, totally. That's so beautiful to me, you know? And you find new ways to kind of articulate new like couplets of words that fit together. And I think like with that situation with your wife, yeah, it's beautiful because you kind of took your time and you wrote that out. And and rather than like just the plain language, I think maybe she caught the essence, you know, even if the words, and that's what's so beautiful about poetry and even having these multicultural spaces of poetry. Even if I don't understand every single word you're saying, whether it be in Portuguese, Frances, Espanol, like I get you though, you know?
Exactly.
The emotion, the essence, the feeling. I felt, you know, I'm feeling what you're translating through that poem. Even if I don't get every word. So yeah.
You mentioned you lived in the Carolinas. Anyone who knows me, you know it's my second, third, whatever home. Deep in my heart is in Raleigh, just north in North Carolina.
Okay, yeah.
In Minnesota, in New Jersey. You're a traveling man, and I know you love travel, and I know you love new places. Where have you been, and where were your favorite journeys?
Oh, man. I feel like I haven't been to a lot of places. I definitely moved around the states a lot. But a little timeline of kind of my travels. In 2012, I went with my friends, IU Band. So it's a part of a collective from some friends, my high school friends. And so we went to China in 2012. That was my first trip, bro, out of the country. So you have to think, I'm an inner city kid, and you know, I moved to Florida when I was around 13, just because of circumstances in New Jersey. And basically, yeah, I'd gotten plugged in with this church early on. And so, yeah, that was a kind of long story, but nonetheless, I ended up taking this trip with my friends on a music tour in 2012, you know, because I've always loved music as well. Like I said, loving words and lyrics and being able to put lyrics together so easily. And me and my brother just have a little rap group, et cetera. So, you know, I've always been in love with music. So in 2012, I went to China on a music tour for 1 month. And I went from Kunming all the way down to Jinhong. Like, so from the north to the south in Yunnan province, to a place, Jinhong, which is called like little northern Thailand, because it's that close to Thailand. So yeah, I did that December of 2012. November of 2013, I went to Haiti. My good friend James Reynolds, he hosts soccer tournaments there, also through the same organization, Inter United, that my friends created. And I did that in 2013 over Thanksgiving for 10 days. And then I went in 2014, I moved to Canada on a project. I was on there for about a year and 3 or 4 months. But that was after I moved from Florida to South Carolina. So sorry, I kind of skipped that one. I moved from Florida to South Carolina and attended the University of Aiken and then moved to Canada. And then I went to Kenya in 2016. Nice. I was there for a month, like I said, kind of project management, etc., creating a bridge. And then I went to United Arab Emirates after that, just for kind of a short layover, but had a time to explore there in Dubai. And then I returned to the U.S., returned to Florida, and then I worked for a few years teaching, and then I ended up going to Puerto Rico to work for 2 months, and then moving from Puerto Rico to Colombia in December of 2017. December 28th of 2017, I moved to Bogota. Oh, and went to San Andres, of course, like for a vacation, and then got back into, you know, Bogota. Yeah, that's the timeline. Travel.
That's crazy, crazy journey, but awesome. And that was one thing that, like, growing up, like, I was kind of like you. I lived in six different states. I went to God knows how many different schools.
Yeah.
And to be forced to move is one thing.
Mm, but when
you get that freedom that I could just buy a ticket.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, sometimes as Americans, we kind of take for granted. I knew people who never left their state or county.
Yeah, no, it's true.
They could just, with a blue book, just go wherever they wanted. And
yeah.
That's the one thing I really appreciate about my friends that I associate with. And we seem to be explorers, but we go off the beaten path. We're not.
Yes, I love it. Yeah,
I'm just gonna go to the Capitol and take a picture in front of the big touristy thing. It's like kind of like the poem that I wrote. Inspired by you is getting your hands in the dirt.
That's right. Yeah.
With the people, eating the traditional food. Like,
yeah, man,
I'm not going to go
walking down some sketch streets,
country, you know, I gotta live it.
Yeah, that's right. It should be that way. You know, Yeah, I think it absolutely should be that way. You know, that's part of really having a true cultural experience. That's why I tend to kind of like, yeah, it's a little hard to understand people who come to a place and then, you know, don't engage or don't, you know, have a desire to learn the language or anything like that. I can't understand that because my brain works with some, like, you know, just inclusion and integration. Like I told you, kind of, I find my identity much in being a chameleon. So I really want to absorb and understand the culture and understand other people's perspectives. You know, perspective is a very important word to me. Perspective, vulnerability, empathy. Yeah. Those are core values.
One thing, like, I love exploring not just who people are, what they are, but who influenced them, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like with music, I love exploring the musical genetics, the inspirations, the collaborations, the collaborations mm-hmm. that could have been.
Yeah. I know you do because of your tattoos, man. You know, the hip hop artists and stuff. I'm pretty sure you are really tapped into that. Like, yeah. Sounds, the combination of sounds and what's new, what's created, like new things created from this kind of amalgamation of different elements.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really like the Amerigo Gasaway project, Soulmates, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. he's now done James Brown and Notorious B.I.G. He did Marvin Gaye, Mos Def, and most
recently, yeah.
Lauryn Hill with Nina Simone.
Yeah, man, that was a dope album. Yeah, I love that album.
it gives me chills. It's like they were in the studio together.
Yeah, that's dope.
So to kind of
Could I touch on that? I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, I wanted to touch on that aspect of hip hop's influence on me. You know. Poetry.
And it's something that I don't think a lot of people really appreciate is this intersectionality of mm-hmm. not just rhythms but words and how they play off of each other. The latest from Black Thought, it just mm-hmm. is an amazing even if it was just acapella,
It'd be phenomenal. Yes, you're right.
It'd be a dramatic spoken word performance.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so and that's the art.
Yeah. Along those lines, I want to kind of dig into who are the top five influences of Travis Thomas.
Good. That's a good question, man. And I'm glad to answer it. I was kind of thinking of some of that, like my influences, man. And I was like, oh man, I'm gonna come up short. I don't know. But know what? I can tell you exactly five. Okay, so the first influence of my life, to be honest with you, was so crazy, bro, is for my Spanish 4, to pass the class, we had a presentation. So the idea was to share 45 minutes, and then we had to do a Q&A for about another additional 20 minutes or so, right? Yo, I was the last person to go, like, to give my presentation. So I had, you know, I was able to see everyone's. And I'm like, if I don't, because I was really timid about, I didn't think I would pass the written part of the exam, you know, for Spanish 4 Universidad Nacional. So I ended up, you know, just like pouring so much energy into my presentation, which was called the Purpose and Power of Poetry, El Propósito y Poder de Poesía. And so I and it was all in Spanish, of course, right?
Yeah.
And so, but kind of what happened after it was a huge success. And like, I ended up actually sharing 2 entire hours. Like, I shared the entire class block and the teacher just let me go. Professor just let me go because they were like so intrigued. And so I started talking about storytelling from a historical standpoint, as far as like Africans and griots, et cetera, et cetera. So fast forward, I came to my influences who first like influenced me. The first wordsmith that I fell in love with was Nas, bro. Like Illmatic. Illmatic was like, bro, there is no greater, like Nas said himself, thug poet. You know what I mean? I'm a thug poet. And that shit's true. And sorry, if I curse. The thing is like the way he encapsulated my story, you get what I'm saying? You see that I feel like I had never connected to a rapper like that before in my life. And the thing was that he was telling my story. He was telling our story, you know, of the projects, you know what I mean? Like having grown up in projects like Fifth Ave, CCP, you know what I mean? And like, you know, pissy elevators and broken up tobacco and all the stairwells and people doing crack cocaine, and, you know what I'm saying? In the stairwells, yeah. And, you know, all of this stuff, man, like in it, like, you know, I was born in the late 80s. So I grew up in the 90s, but still seeing the effects of like crack cocaine still and like, you know, in drugs and all that. So to have Nas tell that story, yo, was like, to me, like, man, he read like those letters. He pulled those lyrics from my heart. You know what I mean? What we were going through to the rest of the world. And it was crazy how that was popular. You know what I'm saying? Like, even now I think back about that, like, wow. So anyway, so Nas was my first influence, bro. As far as just the way he, you know, just formulated the words and the rhymes and the boldness. And so then I would say my getting into poetry influences, unless you wanted to add something to that.
I remember it coming out, and just it was an eye-opening experience for me as a young man, never knowing that it existed, but it wasn't. It was almost in a way untouchable. It was like forbidden. Mm-hmm. Like you just didn't.
Yeah.
And it was like I remember, like, I was joking with my stepsister how we used to hide albums like Bone Thugs East 1999, Tupac, cool. All Eyes on Me. We used to hide these because we knew our parents. I don't want to say that they were. I don't want to even say that they were protecting us, because they weren't. They were removing us from this. They didn't want us to know of such things.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to listen to it, and it just was so eye-opening, and it just blew my mind in that way. And even with the evolution of Nas from Illmatic up to even as late as with Nasir, you see this maturity, but he even reflects in a song that even reminded me of you with your travels of Bonjour.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. I love that, man. I love that.
It was so, like, I even quoted it during a pitch recently.
Nice.
To, like, people with the Duque administration in Colombia and the state of Israel was, like, quoting him saying, you're rich, you're wealthy when your kids' upbringing is better than yours.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
and just seeing that touch,
that's big.
Like that
window, yeah, that's big.
Give a preview to something you will never understand, but you get that taste, and it just blows you away.
We could talk about that later on. Legacy, that's good topic.
So your poetic influences. Let's dig into that.
Yeah, man. So, like I said, so Nas was the first, you know what I mean? I consider him a poet for sure. And my second would be Seamus Haney. And this is so interesting, yo, because, you know, there's like big, burly black dudes that love Sylvia Plath. Like, you know, like it's so interesting how poetry really, like just the words, let the words be themselves. And you find yourself in the words, you connect with the words, and it does not matter, like your color and You get what I'm saying? That's why I love the space of poetry, because let the words be themselves, speak for themselves, let them be, and you feel, you know what I mean? You make contact with the words, and you realize that, like, yo, it didn't matter that this person was a cop, didn't matter that this person was a politician, whatever, it's the words, and the connection is on a human, like, level. It's just empathy. So Seamus Heaney was my second favorite poet, and he's an Irish poet. And he wrote, you know, books like Wintering North, Door into the Dark. You know, he tells about this history of, like, the boglands and about, like, you know, this a whole distinct upbringing than me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't grow up on a farm. My dad wasn't, like, a potato farmer. You know, he has this poem, Digging, which I sent to you before, that I really love. And, you know, he has that final line where he talks about, you know, like, my dad, like, he digs with the spade, etc. But I have no spade, like, to dig, like, as men like these, you know? Like, he says, like, my pen is basically my spade. I'll dig with it. You know what I'm saying? And that was so, so beautiful, bro, for him to, like, the way he shares these imagery of nature, his connection to nature, his connection also to being self-observational through nature, bro. You know what I mean? Like, awakening roots in my head. You know, like, things like that. That's why I loved your poem that you wrote, you know, kind of influenced and kind of wrote as an homage to me, homage. Yeah. Like, I loved it, bro. And that felt like it touched me so deeply because of the way you used nature and you incorporated nature, about getting your hands dirty and the roots and, like you, it's like you read my soul. You know what I mean? Like, you channeled my soul when you wrote that. So that's why I had such a deep connection to that. So, Seamus Heaney, the next would be, Paul Laurence Dunbar. And, he actually influenced Maya Angelou's, Why the Caged Bird Sings, you know?
Okay.
And, yeah, he has a poem called Sympathy. I highly encourage you to read that one. Langston Hughes would be next. Yeah, just writing from that space of oppression and also just being super artistic with the language. And then my next would be, shout out to my people in South Wales, it would be Dylan Thomas. Yeah, right. Kind of rock star poet. I think I love Dylan Thomas for the fact that you always have those people within history or in genres who change things up. Like, if you look at a Drake, how much, like, I hated Drake when he first came out, to be honest with you. Just because I'm like, why is he singing? You know what I mean? Like, this is rap. Like, why is he singing? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, and he was mixing them, and then it was like the lines just being blurred, but it's like, now it's like, yo, I love his music. It's so catchy. You know, it's really poppy, of course. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he wasn't afraid to, like, express his feelings in his music, which was kind of like, yeah, I mean, you had people telling stories, but I think that emotional, sentimental, you know, kind of guy is downplayed a lot in hip hop because of the, you know, the patriarchal masculine, you know, hip hop, what hip hop is, you know, by definition.
Exactly.
So, you know, so as far as Dylan Thomas, he was that guy in poetry, I feel like who broke the mold. It was like F.Y. rules of, like, this and following this, like, you know, I'm going to smoke my cigarette and I'm going to ramble off some words that may seem incoherent to you, but I feel them, you know? And so he has, like, the way Dylan Thomas structures his poetry is so intriguing. And it's caused much people to, like, try to explicate and understand. And he writes as if it's like Jackie Chan. You ever see Jackie Chan in the drunken, like, when he drinks, and what's that, drunken kung fu or something?
Oh,
that
style? Drunken Master. Yeah.
Drunken Master, yeah. When he drinks and he's just like, he's fighting, it's like an order of chaos. Right.
Exactly.
And that's how I would describe Dylan Thomas. It's like he knows, like, it's like you're in a ship, and his poetry is, the language is so, like, nauseating and back and forth. And, you know, the way he puts some things together, you're like, what? Motor mound grinding through gears of my, like, inner seasickness. Like, it's just like, what? But it makes sense. You know? So anyways, I like Dylan Thomas for that reason. Yeah.
I hear a lot of it a lot of it in your style, and it's this, it's this back and forth, and you don't like it's. You grow up when you first step into composition and educational poetry. Mm-hmm. It's this A B A B A B A B.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear even into like a lot of MF Doom in a way, like this word play and twisting, and you don't even know where it's going, and it's hypnotizing because you don't know the way, but you're just following, and you could take this surface layer of it and love it. But when you really dig down deep, one thing I've been looking into a lot is like the history of Motown and the backstories of like what was going on with Tammy Terrell and with Marvin and Tammy Pendergrass. I literally had to stop reading this bio of Marvin Gaye I was reading.
Really?
Because I got to the point about when actually, at my brother's university, back in 1968, Tammy Terrell was at a concert there with Marvin. Collapsed into Marvin's arms. They still don't know what caused her cerebral trauma. Some say it was an abusive boyfriend. Some say it was brain cancer. She didn't die immediately after, but albums were put out after. During that next year, and the guy was interviewing Marvin and like prodding him about this urban legend that it was actually Valerie Simpson who had coached Tammy Terrell at a younger age, who was her vocals in the later songs. And
interesting,
like a musical detective, I went back and listened and then compared it to Silly Wasn't I, and I'm just like, oh my god, maybe it was her. Like, there are these mysteries in it, within the words, within the back end, behind the microphone, in a way, that you could see through these interwoven words. I absolutely love it, seeing that. It's it like you're saying with Drake, you know, it's not just like a catchy poppy tune, but understanding why it was written and how it was written, when, where, all these questions. It just brings this profound level to it that I that's why I love like hearing like your poem Boxcars. It's definitely one of my favorites. I still have the kind of postcard plaque that you
have. Nice. Yeah, a little and print. Yeah.
I hear you singing when I read it. I don't read it. I just hear the resonation.
That's beautiful, bro.
it's so great stuff, man. What's next for Paradox and Poetry?
As far as like Paradox and Poetry right now, honestly, where I am with it is, you know, it's still in a beta phase, I feel, you know? It's like people are like, oh, you know, like, wow, you have these vents and such. And I'm like, yeah, it's still like a baby in an incubator to me. Compared to what I want to do, this is the tip of the iceberg, you know? So the way I would like to structure Paradox and Poetry, and I'll break it down, is four areas, okay? Four areas of influence. And kind of four types of events that we do. Four categories. So one is the open mic poetry. Two is live performances, which we had our first live performance at a place called Meeting House here, where I was able to, you know, as a result of having the open mics, right? You have to think that this is a platform for talent. And so in that, I'm kind of like a mastermind in a sense of like playing a little bit of an A&R role of like, okay, I see what types of artists have that gift. You know what I mean? Have that like gift to share, to captivate, you know what I mean? Because it's more than just like, it's not just reading from a piece of paper. You get what I'm saying? It's the capacity also to understand the impact of your words and the effect on people, how you want it to land in their heart, how you want it to hit them, how you want it to make them uncomfortable. You get what I'm saying? Even that in poetry, you know what I'm saying? So I look for that in poets. So the open mic is kind of also, it's a space of therapy for me, space of therapy for other people, vulnerability, intercultural exchange, but also for me to look and see what type of talent there is here and to almost scout to some degree. And so in that space, I'm creating the collective. And then from the collective is where we have our live performances, where I pick about maybe, you know, 5 to 10, or depending on the size of the venue, artists like musicians, poets, etc., to perform. You get what I'm saying? And so open mic, live performances, education and workshops is very important to me. Educating, like doing workshops on poetry, style, all different types of things. So also workshops, like if you do poetry that centers around trauma, you get what I'm saying? The art of writing even about trauma, you get what I'm saying? I recently had an event and I shared a poem called Trauma, and it caused this, like, we had this big discussion because it was a smaller space, and it was like so therapeutic. Like, I'm telling you, there's probably like no dry eye in El Nido, then when we first had it, because everyone was just sharing like experiences. And to me, that was like so fulfilling. So like I said, workshops that kind of focus on certain topics, whether it be like with Maria, she could really highlight Exodus, the Venezuelan situation, and share from her perspective how it feels. You get what I'm saying? Trauma, LGBTQ issues, and kind of dilemmas of identity and finding a space and being acknowledged, you know what I'm saying, for your sexual preference, etc., right? So open mic, live events, education and workshops, and the last is private, kind of private events, etc., that would maybe for like, if we did like, you know, if there's a business party and, you know, they want it to be less of a party, like, but more and more of a like a heart to heart between employees, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that's our spaces that we can facilitate, you know, for corporate meetings and conferences and things like that, you know, because I also want to bring poetry and vulnerability into the corporate spaces, you know what I mean? Because I think that's a space that also, that really needs it, that needs empathy, etc. So going forward, paradox and poetry, those are the four areas of kind of that I want to focus on for now. In the next season, following that, of course, will come the publications, you know, so I'm working with, an editor and a graphic designer to kind of help us with being able to create publications, quarterly publications of some of the artists that would serve also to empower and put some money in the pockets of some of the artists and poets that attend our events. Mm-hmm. So, and then I would say, you know, there's kind of like a 2-year, 5-year, 10-year thing. Ultimately, I think the goal is to have paradox and poetry, international. So connecting it to some of the projects that I've done, like I told you, with China, with Haiti, with Kenya, with like, I would love to have paradox and poetry in these areas, and even to the point where I'm able to fly poets and artists to like, hey, we have a big conference in Kenya. You get what I'm saying? And I need 5 people and be able to select those 5 people and actually go and fly and do an intercultural exchange with Colombians and, you get what I'm saying? Poets from around the world, you know, and writers and sharing spaces like that. And that ties in ultimately, bro, to, and I'll say this and I'll shut up, paradox culture. And Paradox Culture is an organization I created when I left Canada. And the tagline, the objective of that organization is to cultivate and catalyze global culture. So paradox and poetry kind of falls under that umbrella to some degree of paradox culture, because I want to influence culture and understand the power of cultural capital as an interculturalist, you know, and that's kind of like where I want to kind of leave like my legacy kind of in the world is that I made people more culturally aware, more human, you know, more empathetic, understanding, you know, different perspectives, etc.
Love it. Love it. When is the next Paradox and Poetry open mic?
The next open mic is actually, we have an open mic Afro Poetry Night, which is March 8th. And yeah, that's one of the things I realized is doing the open mics, how, because you know, you've been to our events and it's yeah. super integrated, right? And we have a large Afro-Colombian community. And I went to the Hay Festival out in Cartagena. And that was a very interesting experience from many different levels, on many levels. But understanding the plight of Afro-Colombians and their voices and their stories that many times are overlooked in national narratives. So I want to, yeah, I really want to give voice, of course, being African myself. You know, I want to give voice to those stories and give them a space to kind of talk about, you know, like, yeah, kind of growing up in these spaces with different narratives that don't include you. And, yeah, the underrepresentation at times and, you know, how it feels. And there's several things. But I want to make sure, I'm always giving voice to the underprivileged in communities and in different countries and things like that.
Awesome. If people want to go to this, how can they find out more and what are the social accounts for Paradox and Poetry?
Well, we have Instagram. It's Paradox and Poetry. Yep, just spelled out just like that. And then Facebook is the same thing, Paradox and Poetry. Awesome. So we have a Facebook page where we post all of our events and an Instagram page.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Travis, for taking the time to speak with us. I can't wait to get back down to Bogota and attend another event. It's definitely something that one of the things I'm going to miss the most about the city was that event and just the community of it. So thank you so much for taking the time and thank you for allowing me to be part of the community.
Yeah, yo, thanks for sharing, man. You definitely have a gift, man, and I definitely hope you keep writing and you keep doing what you're doing, especially this. Like, thank you for allowing me to share my heart, you know what I mean? I'm definitely, like, enjoying kind of being able to share my perspective because I feel like I want to be able to look back on, like, interviews like this as well and to say, like, yeah, that's the plan I had all the time, you know? Like, and, you know. So those things, it's really nice for me to be able to kind of lock myself into these spaces. You get what I'm saying? Like in retrospect, and also to share and just I like being asked questions, to be honest with you, because I like exploring as a writer. So thanks a lot, man, for providing me this opportunity.
Yeah, no problem at all, man. Have a great one.
You too, man.
What you're about to hear now is one of my absolute favorite poems by Travis. It's called Boxcars. And there's something I can't even describe it. The emotions and feeling that come with it. It's part gospel. It's part nostalgia. It's just something that you feel deep in your soul and you feel, I think anybody can relate to it. If regardless of if you even speak English and understand the words, it's just, there's something about it just resonates with you. So this is Boxcars by Travis Thomas.
Like boxcars in the night, rolling towards the light, trying to find our way back home, to find our way back home. Like boxcars in the night, rolling towards the light, trying to find our way back home, to find our way back home. like boxcars in the night, rolling towards the light, hoping sounds excite something deep within ourselves. Long we left home to roam on inflated dreams. We boxed up beliefs with sweaters and jeans. We were sure we could follow stars. So we hopped on constellations, impatient, no fear, trusting the clouds would catch us if we fail. The cosmos swelled in our guts because the world was our oyster and we ate it up. We were full of freedom without remorse. We made choice on a whim, unknown wind behind the cell of our ignorance. We broke glass and laughed at our reflections, no superstition to keep us guessing. We were lost and in love with bad maps. We laughed at what we lacked and made it work. Caution was a distant relative we only acknowledged when he visited from afar. Life was a jar to us all, pride open to reveal a glass packed with blackberries, a sweetness that feels like the first time every time. And we would rewind the days again. Do you remember when? When optimism was first nature, when refrigerator boxes were castles or spaceships and car rides were roller coasters in our eyes, when the world reset in our sleep and we woke up to new days, now we wonder where they went. Now boxcars carry the things we need so we can continue to do the things that we hate. And we travel across tracks, no roller coaster ride. We drive to storehouses of desolate dreams, skeletons and cubicles where wonder flees daily dying. Remember when? When we had life, when we had wonder, when mistakes and blunders were comical, but now we pass playgrounds and pour liquor for the lost boys and girls of ourselves. But what if? What if? Like, what if we could reinvent the world? You know, like, just shake it till it's blank like an Etch-A-Sketch. What if the death that died could be resurrected where women speak Talitha Kumin into their hearts and men retrace their steps through echoes in the wood backwards from brittle bones and security underneath fierce failure where we do things afraid? But we find through portals where mortals no more explore, implore, adore the dawn, recrown the king and heir is born, dethrone the dead in bed and thread with wonder, silk, quilt, warmth, storm, troil, trouble, broken vessels worn thin, expend pens where the ink be our blood. We'll flood the world again. If we could remember when we believed in boxcars in the night, rolling towards the light, trying to find our way back home, to find our way back home. Like boxcars in the night, rolling towards the light, trying to find our way back home, to find our way back home.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning into today's episode of the podcast. Quick shout out to our sponsors, Wax Up Candles, made dearly and truly by my friend Catalina Perez. Wax Up Candles for all your handmade candle needs. And Paradox and Poetry, obviously, not just because of this episode, but dear, dear to my heart. With live events, open mics, and even private events for your not so much party needs, but more of a deep insight into the world of poetry and its effects on people, whether in universities or corporate settings, Paradox and Poetry. You can find them at Paradox and Poetry on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you so much again for tuning into the podcast. And if you do wish to be a guest or know of somebody that I should have as a guest, please feel free to let me know. And thank you for your continued support.